Good morning. It is Kale and Company Live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Thursday morning. And we are presented, as always, by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And we always love to talk about the theater on this radio station. We do a lot with our shows during the week, this show and others on this radio station. And we always like to talk about the community players of Concord because they do such a terrific job and have been for, 96 years? It's something like that. I believe they're in their 96th year at this point. At any rate, not in their 96th years, there are a couple of people in studio today. We have Vicki Sandin. Vicki, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Travis Lachlan. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here early on this Thursday morning. The Community Players of Concord this weekend will be presenting a production of Pride and Prejudice at the Concord City Auditorium, the Audi. That's at 2 Prince Street in Concord, right near police headquarters. Friday, tomorrow at 7:30, Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 2, three performances. Tickets still available, but it's going to be a great production. And as we mentioned, joining us in studio, Vicki Sandin. She is the director. And this time, I was reading this in the Concord Monitor last week. This is not your grandmother's Jane Austen edition of Pride and Prejudice.
No.
So tell us, what does that mean?
It's kind of a mashup of contemporary and Regency period, which is when Jane Austen wrote back in the early 1800s in England. So we've kind of taken liberties with the traditional presentation of a Jane Austen play or a Jane Austen drama and added some disco music. And
disco music, huh?
Some modern dress. And
Converse.
Converse shoes. Travis is the only one who doesn't wear sneakers because he's Mr. Darcy.
Well, of course.
But modern music. The playwright, Kate Hamill, who wrote this version of Pride and Prejudice, really emphasizes the fun and the irony and the gags in this story. And so we tried to bring that front and center and try to combine that with a little bit of drama as well.
So it is a contemporary version, pretty much, of Pride and Prejudice. People have seen, there have been a few movies
of
Pride
movies
and Prejudice. Now, I'll ask you both, Vicki and Travis, have you watched those movies?
I haven't watched them yet. Trying to avoid.
Oh, okay, yeah. And I was wondering if you would try to avoid them on purpose.
I'm not too precious about it, but I'm gonna wait. I hear they're great. Everybody loves them.
Yeah, and you, Vicki, have you seen them?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh yes.
So
yes.
How was this? I'm always curious as to what the selection process is when you do any production with the Community Players of Concord. What the selection process is.
Yeah, we held auditions over 2 days, and I was very surprised by the turnout because I think it was like 60 people came out to audition for all these parts. And I believe Travis was the second to last person to audition.
Really?
Yeah, he was. We'd already kind of decided to go with a Darcy who'd come in earlier, and then Travis came in, and he just blew us away with his audition.
So you saved the best for next to last.
I know, right?
There you go. So now, how familiar with you? I mean, you're a relatively young guy, Travis. Have you read Pride and Prejudice before you were involved in the production?
No, I actually never had. I'm working through it now, the novel.
Yeah?
I'd always heard about it. I think the movie was always kind of on my radar, but
You'll watch it afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew the time period, and I'm familiar with plays that are set around there, so I kind of get the tone, but I never read the material.
So you told me before we hit the air this morning that you went to Concord High School, did not do any theater at Concord High School, started at the University of Virginia.
Yep. I made movies with my friends in high school, so that was kind of where I was that was like the outlet for the acting, I think. And then, so I never really thought of the theater. And I did improv comedy in college with a troupe there. And then went to Chicago to train some improv. And then when I went to Los Angeles, 2010, and that's where I started studying dramatic acting in like a consistent way. Meisner technique. I took a
Meisner technique.
Meisner, yeah. Yeah. Sanford Meisner.
So and, yeah. what is that technique in 300 words or less?
It came out with it was like the teachers at that time, it was like the 40s, 50s.
About, yeah.
And they were it was coming from Russia, the Stanislavsky. It was like a tradition of like realistic quote unquote realistic acting. And Meisner was all about working off the other person that you're acting with. Uh-huh. So it was much more about really trying to connect in a human way versus having some idea in your head of how you think it was going to go, or presentational acting is how it used to be called, I think. And Meisner was just very, very strict about don't make anything up, just work off the other person and try to have an experience as a human being with the dialogue. I mean, then you have to put the dialogue on top of it.
But
very valuable training.
I'm sure.
I don't know what I would do without it. So, it was great. Playhouse West was the school.
Playhouse West.
I'll do a shout out to the school.
Of course. No, that is terrific. And when did you begin your career as a legitimate stage actor?
Well, just kind of gradually. I mean, it hasn't been full time, you know. So, while I was at that school in Los Angeles, I performed on stages here and there. Got some TV and film gigs here and there. And now I'm back in Concord. For the time being, and it was great to find the community players because they're incredible.
They really are.
The facility is amazing, and the production value and the standards they set are just—it's so refreshing. It's great.
It really is. I was saying, I say it many times on the show that we are so fortunate to have the theater community that we have in this area. The community player is certainly a large part of that. But Vicki, you've been associated with the players before.
Yes,
I have. What have you done in the past?
In 2019, I directed a 90-minute, two-person play called Bakersfield Mist over at the Hat Box. And then in February of 2020, I directed Odd Couple Female for the players on the main stage.
Very good. In 2020, huh?
Yeah, so, and then everything shut down.
Closed down after that.
I know.
So you did the female version of The Odd Couple. I have never seen the female version of The Odd Couple, but...
Yeah, it's set in the 80s instead of in the 60s. So instead of Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, you have women.
So Pride and Prejudice, the production coming up starting tomorrow night in downtown Concord. Is set, what would you say, basically?
It's still set in 1812.
Oh, okay.
It is. Yeah. It is still set in 1812.
With disco music, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, it's still traditionally
traditional
but there's
disco
like
music.
Inserts of modern.
Yeah.
So what about some of the challenges there? The way the story is written, dialects, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with Jane Austen's works. I started... studying her in the 1990s, so she's been my friend for all this time. So every few years I read all her novels, so I'm very, very familiar with the source material, which I think helps me to, the leads, Julia and Travis, to try and understand their characters and where they come from. The source material is so rich in characterization, and that's what she excelled at. So bringing the characters, at least for me as a director and with the actors I have, the two leads, has not been difficult at all because they go into the breach with me. I'm a huge devotee of the Meisner technique. So, we've had some conversations of how to be in the scene with your partner, you know, giving your partner something to work from, you know, respecting the script, completely respecting the script, even down to the point where, you know, she puts in here an ellipsis, or she puts an M dash, or she starts, gives this line, its whole paragraph. Those are important things to look for in a script and how to create your character and what she wants you to do with it.
And so, you don't deviate.
I try not to deviate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't read the stage directions like, you know, this person goes stage right or picks up a bell. It's like, I don't do that.
Yeah.
Much to a lot of actors' dismay.
Yeah. So it'll be a great production. We'll talk more about it. We have to take a quick break here on this Thursday morning. Vicki Sandin is with us, director of this edition of Pride and Prejudice this weekend at the Concord City Auditorium in downtown Concord. The Audi, a great stage and a great place to watch a performance. And also with us, Travis Lachlan. And Travis plays Mr. Darcy. And if you're not familiar with Pride and Prejudice, we'll tell you a little bit about the character of Mr. Darcy. When we come back, we'll have to take a quick break here. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Kale & Company Live here for a Thursday morning. Great to have you along with us. And we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And we're talking theater this morning. The production, the Concord, the Community Players of Concord, presenting Pride and Prejudice this weekend at the Concord City Auditorium, 2 Prince Street in downtown Concord. And the box office opens 90 minutes before each performance. And I understand there are still tickets available, but get them ASAP. And you can do it by going on right now to communityplayersofconcord.org and making sure that you will be in the auditorium on either Friday night at 7:30, Saturday at 7:30, or Sunday at 2. Now we have Vicki Sandin with us. She is the director of the show. And we have Travis Lachlan, a Concord High grad. And he plays Mr. Darcy in the show. So tell us a little bit about, if you're not familiar with Pride and Prejudice, tell us about Mr. Darcy.
Yeah, so he's one of the richest men in the land. And all the single ladies are, well, actually they're not really shooting for him to marry him, but because they think he's kind of rude, because he's a little stuck up. I mean, he doesn't think he is necessarily, but he just has high standards, I think, for society and women, definitely. But he comes in. His friend is actually also wealthy, and he's the one that the women are kind of swooning over. But Darcy, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar, ends up being the main romantic lead for Lizzie. And they find their own connections somehow. It's kind of a struggle because they're not immediately attracted. It's kind of like a love-hate relationship.
Right. And Vicki, you said that Travis was like the next to last person to audition for the show. Did you know right away that he would be a good fit for Mr. Darcy?
Yep.
You did?
He was the first one I called.
Yeah?
Yep.
That is great.
Yep.
What were some of his characteristics during his audition that led you to believe that?
When I run auditions, I listen to a monologue. I can't remember if Travis had a monologue or not. You did? Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Forget
marriage, but then,
the marriage.
Yeah, then they read some sides, which are just like selections from the script. And then I direct them in certain ways on how to read it, what I'm looking for,
right,
and if they take direction. And Travis was able to pivot on a dime as to what I was asking him to do. So, and he brought Mr. Darcy with him. I mean, it was just like he was already there. I mean, we work on him a lot because Darcy is, I love him. I love him. And Travis has just done such a beautiful job with him. It's just great.
So you said you're in the process right now of reading the book, Pride and Prejudice, but you didn't have any earlier knowledge of what Mr. Darcy's character was like?
No, not really. And no. I mean, after reading the play, obviously, you get an idea. It's kind of a surface idea because it's kind of hard to dig actually to what motivates his stuffiness without playing it just like a stuffy, you know? You don't want to just play him stuffy. So I'm trying to like figure out where it's coming from, and that the novel really is really the kind of gold mine for all that, because she goes into the psychology more But, I mean, it's kind of like a trope type character. I mean, it can kind of draw from other things I've read. And I just love period pieces in general. So just people who are used to wearing coattails. And it's just fascinating where they get their standards. And back then, I mean, the standards were just different. Society was more traditional and conservative. And I'm fascinated with how conservatism has kind of ebbed and flowed. I mean, definitely ebbing over time. It's kind of going back to that, where a man was this and this and this, and women were supposed to be this, this, and this. It's just fascinating to make to bring it to today and make it make sense, which is difficult because we don't have the same frame of reference at all.
Right.
So it's it's difficult in that sense to relate to him.
Now, how about the dialects? Any special dialects for this?
In auditions, well, I did ask for RPG, which is received pronunciation, which is like the high English British accent.
Right.
So no Welsh, no Irish, no Scottish, please. So everybody's been pretty good at speaking with a British accent. Trying to get everybody on the same page to say one word the same way is kind of interesting.
But, yeah, the variety is an
like
insane reaction
amiable.
To the British.
Yeah. It's not amiable. But,
well,
yeah.
I don't know if that's an accent thing.
Is it?
Just the word.
Yeah,
we'll
I don't know. Well, the way you say words, yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's been, everybody brings their own personality to it in some way. So really, what I've tried to do with each character is I'm trying to find the sweet spot of what makes them who they are.
Right.
So, you know, Travis and I just talked about Darcy yesterday. We had the longest conversation about Darcy since we've met. And I think it was, we shared some good thoughts of where he comes from, why he is the way he is. And it gave me new insights into Darcy that I never had before, just talking to Travis, because he's able to live the part. So it was so much fun. I love that. I love going into a character's backstory and figuring out what makes them tick.
That is really something.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. Have you ever played someone like him in the past? Or?
I've done Shakespeare, but not really this class of people. I mean, Darcy's like a specific class where you get to be pretentious, and it's just part of who you are.
Well,
it's part of your duty, kind of, to be
an aristocrat.
Right, aristocrat.
He's in today's money terms, he would be a multimillionaire.
Okay.
That's basically what he is. Yeah. So, but yeah, he just does have high standards, but I like to look behind why he would have such high standards. That's where I go.
Yeah. So. I mean, that goes to like a societal level too, is like, it's your duty. I think of it almost like your duty to maintain these things as a gentleman of the time. And that's like a kind of a society pressure.
Yeah.
It seems.
Yeah.
So it's and good to his family. He's a loyal family. He's very loyal to his family. People he trusts are people he really trusts. So that's like an admirable thing about him.
But the lovely thing about Travis's performance, even though Darcy does come off as a stuck up and a snob and all that, he's able to find the humor in Darcy and able to find the humor in a situation and just really kill it, which is just so refreshing to see from this traditional character who everybody has learned about, who know about him. They say, oh, he's snobby. But Travis has brought a lot of shade and color to this character, which makes it very fun to watch.
Now in the show, how old is Mr. Darcy supposed to be?
In the book, I believe he's in his late 20s.
Oh, okay.
Elizabeth is supposed to be 18, I believe. Yeah. 18 or 17, like that. So it was very common for older men to marry younger women. Because by 27, a woman was considered an old maid.
And it wasn't love at first sight, as you mentioned.
Well,
I guess it is. I mean, I guess it always.
Not for her.
Really,
no.
That's the difficult
her.
Thing.
But
is when it starts, when you know. And I guess I've had that experience where you don't really know until something happens and you see the person a certain way. That's kind of what I think happens.
Right.
I think he falls in love with her before she loves with him. But I don't think she knows that she loves him. I think she hates him, and the opposite of hate is love. So that's the way I see it for Julia. And I just think Darcy just fights against all his instincts to not love her because she's got an awful family and she doesn't make enough money and they don't travel in the same social circles. And why am I in love with you? I don't get it, but I love you. There you win.
And before we run out of time, Vicki, I want you to talk about the rest of the great cast that you have.
Well, our leading lady is Julia Kerr, she plays Elizabeth Bennet, and her real-life mom, Valerie Kerr, plays her mom, Mrs. Bennet.
Oh, how about
that?
That's
convenient.
Yeah,
we've got a mother daughter. Yeah. It was very convenient.
Yeah.
Dana Sackos, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, plays Mr. Bennet. Patrick McGranahan. I'm so sorry about the Irish Patrick. he plays Mr. Bingley slash Mary Bennet. So he's got a dual role, which he makes hilarious. Elena Oropollo plays Jane Bennet. And who am I missing? Oh, Tapley Trudell plays the baby sister, Lydia Bennet. We have Seth Bunke, who plays the evil Mr. Wickham.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Elaine Saint-Jean, who plays the very, very aristocratic Darcy's aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh. My good friend and my friend for many years, Stephen Post, plays Mr. Collins. And his wife is played by, Corinne Stanley. She plays Charlotte Lucas. So Elena Oropollo, I think is how you pronounce her name.
But. Oh, no.
Well, a great cast, I am certain. And it's going to, the curtain will go up tomorrow night at 7:30. Saturday at 7:30, Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. And we also want to shout out to, the great people who work behind the scenes, which many people often forget. But there's a lot of work that goes into this.
Yes.
Yeah, on stage and behind it as well. And I want to thank both of you for being here early on this Thursday morning. Vicki Sandin, the director, and Travis Lachlan, who plays Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice. And again, it is not your grandmother's Pride and Prejudice.
No, it's not.
Or Jane Austen, for that matter. So thank you both for being here. We really appreciate it, and have a very fun weekend at the theater.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And we will take a break. Be right back. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Thursday morning. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Lynn Sneerson is an award-winning thoroughbred racing writer and a whole lot more. She has more memories of Rockingham Park than anyone else I know. And we welcome Lynn back to the program. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, it's always great to hear your voice. What a delight you are. And before we get into the 150th Run for the Roses coming up in a couple of days, I want to get your take on the state of horse racing as we sit here in 2024.
Oh, wow. that's a big question to start with this morning, Ken.
All right. Well, I'll have a cup of coffee while I listen.
Yeah. There was a federal act pact. It was called HISA, which is the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. And they are trying very diligently, working at it, trying to unify medication and unify regulations and rules and enforcement from state to state. And it's a work in progress. They are getting a lot of support and a lot of criticism, and rightly so, for things that are happening or not happening. But at least now there is a uniform act in the industry trying to pull it all together. And of course, the biggest thing for all of us is the welfare and safety of our horses and our riders. And, we want to see everybody who goes out to the starting gate come back hale and hearty and healthy and sound.
Well, as you know, Lynn, I mean, that you know, that aspect of it is great. I'm glad it's coming along. And the handles, we all know that in most states now in the country, people have casinos on their phone and can, you know, play all kinds of casino games, bet on all the sports, bet on horse racing, a lot of horse racing apps as well for gambling. Yeah, how has the handles at racetracks been impacted by other sports gaming, which is so accessible now?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, because as crazy and really awful as this sounds, the pandemic was a huge boon to horse racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because what happened was, when things were shut down, and a lot of sport, there, you know, there were not a lot of things that guys and gals who need their action could bet on during the entire pandemic. But horse racing was the only sport that didn't shut down. It shut down at a lot of tracks, but a few of them kept going. And people all of a sudden discovered, hey, what's this horse racing thing? I never looked at this before. Seriously.
Yeah.
And handles went crazy during the pandemic. And to its credit, the TV shows and that cover racing, so people could sit when they were sitting at home in a lockdown, they could watch horse racing. And the it's called FanDuel TV now. It used to be TVG. And they did a remarkable job of, okay, this is going to be horse racing 101. And from the anchor desk, they were educating. You know, this is what a daily double is. This is how you play a trifecta. In this, you know, this is how you play a 10-cent superfecta. So you can, you know, bet four horses in this race for, you know, 40 cents. And people were captivated by it, and they discovered this sport that's been around, you know, for forever. Since people, you know, ever first jumped on a horse and said, you know, mine's faster than yours. And it really opened up the industry to an entirely new, untapped market. So the handles are pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, there have never, ever been more televised horse races than there are today. I mean, they're all over the place.
Exactly. They're Fox Sports, they're on NBC, they're on FanDuel TV. It's actually great for me, because I can actually work covering horse racing from my house in Hampstead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got access to virtually every thoroughbred race that's taking place all over the world.
Yes. So, you know, I'm, you know, standing in my office right now, sitting at my desk, and I have I have my flat screen, you know, it's right next to my desk.
Yeah.
And I can sit here, I can watch the race, and I can, you know, get the PPs online. I can have the chart will come up online on Equibase. My partner at the track will grab the quotes for me, the jockey and trainer quotes for me, email them over to me, or if there isn't anybody to do that, I could just call the trainer on my cell phone and ask him or her myself, you know, hey, what did you think of the race? And then I can just start write the race, and send it off. In the old days, I had to actually travel all over the country and go to the races.
And all over the world, for that matter. But
all over the world, indeed, yes.
But now you don't have to. Times have changed. And, you know, so there were some good things, anyway, that came out of the pandemic. And one of them was probably the revitalization of horse racing.
Yeah. I mean, it's you hate to talk about a tragedy. And, of course, when, you know, so many people died and were sick, and it was so awful in so many ways, people are still, you know, having issues from the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, it, like I said, it just introduced something to the gambling market where gamblers had never paid one whit of attention to it before.
You know, I feel badly for those people who are listening to us here in New Hampshire and other places as well, that never had an opportunity to go to Rockingham Park. I really feel badly for them. I know you spent a good part of your life at Rockingham Park, and it's very near and dear to you. Is there anywhere, Lynn, that any of the artifacts is on display or accessible to people?
Yeah. I should actually check back with the curator of the New Hampshire Historical Society, which, of course, is our history meeting. Yeah, I donated not me personally, but I had asked the owners of the track if instead of putting everything into the auction that I could go through it and we could save some things and send some things to, you know, get them in some museum. So, and Eddie Callahan was great about that. He was an advocate. Eddie Callahan was the president of the racetrack and been there forever as well. And Eddie fought for it, advocated, and we did. Eddie and I went through it. We spent weeks going through 106 years of history at the time, cut out the dust cloths and, dusted a lot of stuff back that had, been, in closets for years. And we went through everything, and we separated some things out, and we did donate a bunch of things to different museums. So there are things in the Salem Town History Meeting. I got a bunch of stuff sent to the museum in Concord. I personally drove in my SUV, filled it up with things, and drove up to the National Museum, Thoroughbred Museum in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Yeah.
And Dick Johnson, the wonderful Dick Johnson, the curator of the New England Sports Museum at Boston Garden, he came up with his van. We gave him a bunch of stuff. So, yes, there are museums. There are places where people can see. And there will be something coming and happening in the not near future, or should say the near future. We'll have to keep figuring that out. At Tuscan Village.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna do something at the village to commemorate that it was, because there are people who live there now, live there, eat there, work, shop, play, have no idea that they're standing on what was Rockingham Park Racetrack.
Really, it was, and it was one of the top tracks in the nation for many, many years. I guess most prominent when it was mentioned in the Sting. So it was mentioned, during that race that was highlighted in the movie The Sting. So
We were on Spencer for Hire. They did an episode at the track. The old, remember the old TV detective TV show?
Sure.
They did. One day during the pandemic, I was sitting in my house watching Turner Classic Movies, and I'm watching an old Joan Crawford film noir movie from, I don't know, was it the 1930s or something? And Rockingham Park was in the movie.
Wow. Oh, my.
Yeah.
And you didn't know that? Wow.
I didn't know it. Eddie Callahan didn't know it.
Wow.
None of us knew it. It was, the scene was, she was in an office of a quote-unquote, respectable businessman. And he turned out he was a mobster. He was a gangster. He was a Don. And in the office, they open the wall, the bookcase, the fake wall, and they go in the back, and it's a race book.
Wow!
And they've got the big, black chalkboard is one wall, and then they're writing in the white chalk, because it's a race book. And and one of the tracks was Rockingham Park.
How about that? That is amazing. You'll find it everywhere, folks. Memories of Rockingham Park. Lynn, we will talk about the Derby, I promise, but we have to take a quick break. Lynn Sneerson is with us, and so glad to have her on this Thursday. And we shall return right after these words. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back, Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Award-winning thoroughbred racing writer Lynn Sneerson is with us. And Lynn, we're going to discuss the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby Saturday. Gets underway just a little ahead of 7 o'clock, but a lot goes on before that, including tomorrow's Kentucky Oaks. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Derby's the run for the roses, and the Oaks is the lilies for the fillies, because they get lily blankets, and you know, of course, the Oaks has become almost as big as the Derby. I mean, there'll probably be 150,000 people there on tomorrow, Friday. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. Everybody wears pink, you know, on the day. An interesting race. I love the fact that I love Tarifa. But, you know, we'll see. She seems to be the horse coming around at the right time. And, of course, just FYI, who was the two-year-old filly champion last year, won the Breeders' Cup fillies. She's back. She had a little bit of a hiccup, shall we say, in her first race, the race or so back this year. But, you know, coming in awful of a layoff and, you know, probably needed those to get back into the swing of it. But, you know, the question is always with these two-year-old champions, and we'll talk about one in the Derby, is will they progress? Will they keep moving forward? Will they mature? Or was that it? We've seen so many two-year-olds who were, wow, and you think that this horse is going to be, you know, a generational horse, and this horse is going to be great, and they don't move forward. So my thoughts about the Oaks is I do like two of the favorites, but we'll see if they can, you know, if these little girls can step up, you know, on the biggest stage tomorrow.
And as we discuss the field for Saturday's Derby, always strange once again not to see a Bob Baffert-trained horse in the field. Where does Mr. Baffert's suspension stand right now?
Well, you know, sometimes when you're covering sports, as you well know, Ken, you figure, geez, I should have gone to law school.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, writing more about the court cases and the decisions and the requests for injunctions and the appeals when it comes to Bob these days. But yeah, he's still suspended. This will supposedly be the last year, so he'll. If all goes well and, you know, there are no more infractions and violations and bad things, we'll see him back in the Derby next year. Well, he'll definitely be in the Preakness and he'll definitely be in the Belmont. And let me tell you, he is loaded this year.
Wow.
The best three-year-olds right now are in Bob Baffert's barn. They are not in the contender.
Bob Baffert's barn. There you go. 20-horse field for this year's running of the Roses at Churchill Downs as it stands right now. Who do you like?
Well, you know, when you look at the field, you have to say that Fierceness is the best horse in the race. And that, you know, if he runs his race, he wins the Derby. And the fact that we had a defection, so he moved out of the, you know, the terrible, awfulest, most bad post-17 that nobody wants to draw, which he did. He's moved over now into the 16. So that will be very much to his benefit with the defection. But, you know, I mean, we know there are questions about Fierceness, okay? I mean, he's been absolutely brilliant, and then he's had days where you just scratch your head and go, is this Fierceness? He's like the little girl with the curl, you know, the curl in the head. When he's good, he's very, very good. When he's bad, he's horrid. So we'll have to see which Fierceness shows up. But, you know, on paper, he's the best horse in the race.
Certainly a veteran jockey in John Velazquez on Fierceness, trained by Todd Pletcher. So Fierceness running out of the 16th post position. Who else could possibly win the Derby tomorrow?
I have loved Sierra Leone since he was born. I mean, it's his trainer, Chad Brown. Four-time Eclipse winner, will be in the Hall of Fame as soon as he's eligible. You know, Chad has said that, you know, he's been a star since the day he was born, and the spotlight has been on him. Enormously talented horse, incredibly talented. But he's a deep closer, you know, and once he gets rolling, once he gets in gear and gets his legs under him, he is a steamroller. And the distance, he will love the distance. The mile and the quarter should not be a problem for him at all. This horse will run all day long. Where it is very suspect the distance on the mile and a quarter and some other horses, so we don't worry about that. But I worry about a 20-horse field, you know, and I worry about with a deep closer be able to navigate and wend his way through the inevitable traffic that you get with 20 horses. And the question is, you know, because he does come from so far back, you know, we're going to have to, you know, get a pretty quick pace up front for the speed to come back to him. But I don't think a quick pace in the Derby is going to be a problem, because a lot of horses know their only chances. They've got to gun it out of the gate and just run as fast as they can. So I do anticipate the speed will come back. The pace will be advantageous to him, but you know he can't get too far back and he can't hit traffic. But again, but you know if all goes well for him, I absolutely can see him beating Fierceness.
All right, so I have a 16 written down and a 2. How am I going to complete my trifecta, Lynn?
Okay. You want a little bit of a long shot?
Sure.
Okay. I like Just a Touch. This horse is trained by Brad Cox, who also will be in the Hall of Fame. Brad is a Louisville native, so, you know, meaning grew up right near the track, and this has, of course, been his, you know, his ideal forever. And Brad Cox wants to win the Kentucky Derby, quote unquote, legitimately. He wants the thrill of standing in the winner's circle and winning, because he does have a Derby win, because he came in second a couple years ago when Bob Baffert's horse won the race, but then was disqualified for medication violations. So he won the Derby by default. But he wants the thrill of actually standing there winning the Derby. And Just a Touch, you know, he's legit too. You know, his bluegrass when he came in second to Sierra Leone was an excellent effort. It was a big race for him, especially, you know, being only his third time out ever. You know, and he's been improving every single time. He's the son of Justify, who was an undefeated Triple Crown winner in 2008, another Bob Baffert horse. And, you know, he arguably ran just as well as Sierra Leone in the bluegrass after he had to chase a very fast early pace. And as I said, there figures to be a hot pace. And, you know, he's got Florent Giroux, an excellent jockey. And, you know, if Florent Giroux can, you know, figure out how to work out a trip for him without burning him out so early, so he's got plenty of gas left for that long stretch, I definitely see him coming into a trifecta.
All right, so 16, 2, and 8 I have for my trifecta. Okay, very, very good. So when you, and we only have about a minute left, unfortunately, but when you handicap a race, what is the first thing you look at?
I look at the past performances to see if the horse is improving, is plateauing, or is tailing off. And you always want to go with the horse who's coming in, like any athlete, any team, peaking at the right time.
Okay. Good advice, as always, from Lynn Snearson, my favorite handicapper of all time. And Lynn, we appreciate it. Who are you working for this weekend?
NBC Sports.
Very good. And they will have the race and all the races before that as well on Saturday from Churchill Downs. And what's that? And Friday. Yeah.
And Friday. Yeah, yep. They're doing 12 and a half hours of coverage between Friday and Saturday across their platforms. USA Network, USA Network, NBC, and Peacock. You can catch everything.
You can see all of the races, including the Oaks and the Derby. It's going to be a great weekend. And Lynn Snearson, I thank you very, very much for joining us this morning.
Well, I thank you very, very much for having me, and it's so great to always be with you, Ken.
Well, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate that, and the feeling is mutual, and we'll have you back real soon. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks. Okay, bye.
Lynn Snearson, talking horses here on Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Thank you very much for joining us on this Thursday morning. Don't forget tomorrow, the Friday Fun Bunch here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And remember, folks, to always look on the bright side of life. Have a great Thursday, everybody.